The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I don't want another young gymnast, Olympic athlete, or any individual to experience the horror that I and hundreds of others have endured before, during, and continuing to this day in the wake of the Larry Nassar abuse. To be clear, I blame Larry Nassar, and I also blame an entire system that enabled and perpetrated his abuse. USA Gymnastics and the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee knew that I was abused by their official team doctor long before I was ever made aware of their knowledge.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, that is such a horrible story. It really is. Sitting here just listening to Simone Biles, of course, gold medalist, U.S. gymnast. She testified about the horrific events that unfolded between her and Larry Nassar, and of course, so many of the other gymnasts who went through the same thing. Time just unveiled its list of 100 most influential people, and Biles was, of course, one of those. She and her fellow gymnasts, Kayla Maroney and Maggie Nicholas and Ollie Railman, they all shared their experiences as well. You know, my heart just goes out. It goes out to those girls and to any victim of abuse. And if you are undergoing that right now, I just want to encourage you to get help. Take a chapter from these girls' books. I know it might be easier for me to say that, but, you know, call it out. Put an end to it. I was always impressed by the courage of so many of these women who stood up to really what was a monster. You know, Simone Biles, she testified yesterday at the U.S. Senate panel, before the U.S. Senate panel that was investigating the investigation that the FBI conducted on Larry Nassar. Nassar's in prison for sexually abusing not just one, two, three, four girls, but abusing literally hundreds. I mean, you heard me right, hundreds of girls and women. He did it under the guise of, you know, giving them medical treatment. But when the U.S. gymnasts did their own internal investigation, this is back in 2015, and they actually reported their findings to the FBI. You know what the FBI did? The FBI apparently stalled in opening a full investigation, and later the field agents who were supposed to be taking care of it, they lied. They lied to their superiors to make it look like, well, they were being diligent in their duties. So Simone Biles, for her part, said that, you know, the after effects of what Nassar did to her were part of the reasons why she had to withdraw from the competition in Tokyo. And of course, that stunned the world at the time. We're thinking, what are you doing? You're in the Olympics. You're the best gymnast in the history of the sport. We need you. And she pulled out. But look, when you're back in that environment again, there are triggers. There are things that set you off. And I don't know what it's like to be wounded like that. And I just want to offer love and support and prayer to anyone who's been through that. But in response to what went down, Time Magazine, they named her as one of their top 100 most influential people in 2021. And I'm so grateful for her. Rachel Dollenhollander, she's one of the others. I actually wrote about her in my book because she so eloquently and powerfully not only called Larry Nassar out, but she forgave him. And she looked the man in the eye, and she said to him, you know, Christ told me this is what I'm to do, and Larry, therefore, I offer you forgiveness. And she said, I hope one day. And I should share her story. Maybe I'll share her story with you coming up a little later. I don't have time for it now, but, you know, she says, Larry, I hope one day you come to true conversion. I hope you truly come to know Christ. I mean, that's love. How do you say that to somebody who violated and wounded you? I mean, you might be in that same situation right now listening to me where you are. You might be saying, I can never do it. My heart is filled with hatred. I want vengeance and I want revenge on that person who hurt me or my loved one, right? But as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, we're called to do it. He did it, right? He hung on a cross, and the very men that nailed him to that cross, the very people who betrayed him, he offered love and redemption. What did he do? What was his prayer as his blood drained from his body and he saw his own mother at the foot of the cross weeping? He turned to his heavenly Father and he says, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. You know, I'm not making excuses for anybody here. I believe in justice as much as I believe in mercy, and I hope Larry Nassar gets his justice. But as Christians, as Catholics, as followers of Christ, we are called to forgive and to offer mercy. It's a tough thing, and I pray to God all the time that I'm not put to that test. You know, I'm weak, and I hope, pray I never fail. You know, but it's a tough test, and we all have to forgive, right? Not one of us, not you, not me, has not in our lifetime been faced with an opportunity where it's easier to hold on to vengeance and unforgiveness and to the hurt than it is to forgive the person who did that to us. I was betrayed in a business deal one time and really misrepresented. And for a long time, I had some animus towards the person who lied and misrepresented me, right? In the end, truth always comes to the surface. I was vindicated, but I had to forgive the person. I said, look, I don't want to. I don't feel like I can. But I know that just as love, you know, is an act of the will. You know, you don't always feel in love, you know. So is forgiveness. You know, I had to willingly forgive that person. I didn't feel it, didn't want it, but I willed it. I willed what was best for that person. And when that happened, that connection to that person just dissolved. And with time, there's freedom and true love now. I can truly forgive that person and I wish the best for that person. I really do. And you'll find the same thing for that spouse that cheated on you or left you, or the person that abused you, or the person that cheated you in business or lied. Maybe you're sitting behind a prison cell right now, you know, and you're there and you're innocent. It's hard to forgive, I know, but we're all called to do that. God will bring greater good out of our circumstances, that's for sure. Hey, the city of Portland, Oregon, decided to cancel its boycott of Texas goods. I shared with you a little bit yesterday how wacky that state can be sometimes, and I know there's some good people in Oregon, but no, that's Patrick Alog, my call screener today, saying, keep Portland weird. It's Austin. Keep Austin weird. But he's saying same thing. I don't know what Portland's motto is, but they started a boycott shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to intervene in a case that would have delayed the start of the Lone Star State's, you know, new law that allows people to sue anyone who knowingly aids or abets a woman in procuring abortion after the heartbeat can be detected. So instead, the city is now considering setting aside about $200,000 that will go to organizations that deliver programs and services related to reproductive health care. Oregon Public Broadcasting reported this.
Portland City Commissioners today sent a message to Texas lawmakers over a controversial new law to restrict abortions there. The council passed a resolution that provides funding for Texas residents who come to Oregon seeking reproductive health care.
The resolution allocates $200,000 in funding to local reproductive health care providers to serve patients who come here from Texas. That funding was a point of contention for one city commissioner.
Commissioner Mingus Mapp said he supported the overall tone of the resolution, but questioned whether the city should be in the business of funding health care. Mapps introduced two resolutions and a separate motion seeking to remove the funding, delay the funding, or delay the vote, none of which were seconded. Along with the funding for reproductive health care services, the resolution directs city staff to send a letter to Oregon's congressional delegation urging them to pass the Women's Health Protection Act. It also directs the city attorney to write a legal brief to assist in the U.S. Department of Justice's lawsuit challenging the Texas abortion law.
All right, there you have it. So, you know, it was there was one vote actually against the proposal. Apparently, you know, the city does too much business with companies in the state to do the boycott. $35 million over the last 5 years, $6 million a year. Instead, they set it aside. $200,000 for organizations like Planned Parenthood to do abortions, right? So it's so ridiculous. You know, with everything that's going on in that state, there was one vote against the proposal because that council member didn't see the need for spending that money, and he was right, right? $200,000 to Planned Parenthood. He said, we've got gun violence, we've got a homelessness crisis, we have a trash crisis, we have a pandemic. Yeah, let's give money to Planned Parenthood. Let's support the culture of death. Let's not just clean up our streets. You know, let's not deal with some of the other crises that are facing the citizen of our state. Let's give money to Planned Parenthood. Not like they don't have enough. They get $503 million. They get $500 million a year of our taxpayer dollars. No, that's a disgrace, an absolute disgrace. But you got to hear this story. I'm going to share one more with you. I think this is a great, great story. The town of Hudson, Ohio, right? A textbook that's used in that in this town, right? It's called 642 Things to Write About. It's a book with ideas to help students write essays. But some of those ideas, they're bad. I mean, they're just downright bad. They're deviant. So bad that the mayor actually called them child pornography. So the Epoch Times, they reported that according to Amazon reviews, several of the writing prompts, including describing, they want kids. Now, I got to make sure you understand what I'm talking about here. Children. They want children to write to describe sex or similar topics. Another prompt asked students to drink a beer and described how it tastes or how to commit a murder. Why would you ask a child? Why would you ask a kid on how to commit a murder? Maggie, open your microphone. You also said that a teacher asked them to do what?
I had read that a teacher had asked them to write a prompt that, it's weird to say this, to describe a fantasy that they have that they would never share with their parents.
That's a red flag right there, isn't it?
Right? It's creepy.
Write a fantasy you have, but one that you would never share with your parents. First of all, why is the teacher asking them to do that? And why would you want to keep anything? Why would you want to keep anything from the parent who's the primary educator and the guardian of that child until they're 18 years of age? It is horrible. So I got to just play a piece of audio with you. I was so proud to watch this. I actually applauded when it was done. At the last school board meeting, the very last school board meeting, the mayor of that city, Mayor Craig Schubert, he addressed the board. Listen to what he said.
Earl, members of the board, my name is Craig Schubert. I'm the mayor of this city. It has come to my attention that your educators are distributing essentially what is child pornography in the classroom. I've spoken to a judge this evening. She's already confirmed that. So I'm going to give you a simple choice. You either choose to resign from this Board of Education, or you will be charged. Thank you.
Oh, man, I bet he had a stack of resignations, right? It's come to my attention that you educators are distributing essentially what is child pornography in the classroom. He went, he spoke to a judge, she confirmed, yeah, this meets all the criteria, this is child porn. So he says to them, I'm giving you a simple choice. You either choose to resign from this Board of Education, or you will be charged. And you hear the eruption of applause from the parents, woo, yeah! There's a new sheriff in town. There's a new sheriff in town. Wow. Wouldn't that certainly be a novel charge, you know? And law experts aren't sure how, you know, it would really hold up at court. But, I mean, that's a pretty amazing statement. And I'll tell you, every single parent before that school board applauded. And look, this is of course, Ohio. This is happening in every state across our union. You see these school board meetings. They're teaching critical race theory. They're indoctrinating our kids with pornography and a litany of other things. That parents are now rising up and saying, enough is enough. Parents should just send their kids off to school and trust that they're going to be educated and well-formed. And now teachers are saying, don't tell your parents about this. Write this down. Share a fantasy you wouldn't share with them. Write an essay on how you would murder somebody. I mean, what the heck is going on? I always go back to what Sister Lucia DeSantis, the seer in Fatima, said. She had shared this with Cardinal Caffara in an interview that he did with her. And said that the final confrontation, the final battle, it will be over what? It'll be over marriage and family, right? And we see the attack on marriage, the whole redefinition of it today in our culture. And we see the attack on family. What's a byproduct of that family union? It's life. So Satan has his crosshairs on marriage and family, and we are seeing it play out. There is a lot of confusion, isn't there? There really is. There's a lot of confusion going on. I want to share an article I came across from The Pillar. And we've spoken about The Pillar in the past. I know both the men who founded this particular website and are doing the reporting there. And I had seen from sources that some people would think, you know, that's probably a credible source. I had seen from different places, New York Times, CNN, the AP, spin a story that the Holy Father, spun a story on the comments that the Holy Father made when he was in Hungary and Slovakia and over the weekend. And as always, the Holy Father on these trips or journeys, he holds a press conference right on the plane. He was on his ride back back to the Vatican, I think from Slovakia. And one of the reporters there asked him, I think a really good and an important question, something we've talked about here together. He asked him about denying politicians who support abortion. And he actually was very clear on abortion, saying this, okay? And he said in no uncertain terms, quote, "It is more than a problem." This is the Holy Father, right? "It is murder." That's what the Holy Father says. Very clear, right? "Whoever has an abortion kills," and no half words. "Take any book on embryology from medical students. The third week after conception, all the organs are already there, even the DNA. It is human life. This human life must be respected. The principle is so clear. To those who cannot understand, I would ask you this question. Is it right to kill a human life to solve a problem? Is it right to hire a hitman to kill a human life? Scientifically, it's a human life, and it's right. It is right to take it out and solve. Now, is it right to take it out to solve a problem? That's why the church is so hard on this issue, because if it accepts this, it would be accepting daily murder. But then when it came to talking about politicians and, of course, promoting abortion, that wasn't quite as clear. He said that pastors need to be pastoral about how they deal with this. And we've spoken about Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and so many other very prominent politicians who are advocating and supporting and using their power, their platform, in their office to advance a culture of death. He said, personally, he has never denied anyone communion, but he also added he's never been presented with a situation where he might need to. And he was clear that he was saying this wasn't specific just to the United States because he was just giving general principles. But that didn't stop the media from saying that the Pope doesn't want the U.S. to deny Joe Biden or any other politician Holy Communion. So what's the truth? Where does the Holy Father stand on it? I thought he was pretty clear in what he said. The Pillar reported it accurately. If you read this in other sources, you probably have a little bit of a different spin. So I invited J.D. Flynn. He's the co-founder and editor-in-chief at The Pillar, and I hope you will follow them at their website. I'll get you connected to it here. J.D., it's good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. I want to get your website right before we talk. PillarCatholic.com, is that it?
Yes.
All right.
Check us out at PillarCatholic.com, or you can find us on Facebook at The Pillar, or find us on Twitter at Pillar Catholic. And again, you can check out our news at PillarCatholic.com.
That's great. I just want to make sure people get plugged into it, because you were one of the rare sources out there that actually did, I think, a very clear and journalistic job on this story. The Pope, I thought, was really clear on abortion, but that got barely reported in the mainstream media. Let's start there. Why wasn't that picked up? That's a huge issue today, a very divisive one. Here's the leader of a billion Catholics worldwide. Why the silence?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times the Pope, when he's on an airplane, will kind of make one sort of pithy phrase that everybody picks up. You think about kind of like multiply like rabbits from a few years ago. And that phrase was widely misunderstood and misreported, but it was sort of the same misreporting just about everywhere you looked. Yesterday was interesting because the Pope offered a pretty sort of thoughtful and complex response to a question about abortion and pro-choice politicians. And he said enough things that kind of everybody could cherry pick the parts they like the most. So I saw a lot of news reports in which it was only talked about that the Pope, warned pastors not to be harsh or not, you know, to be close to their parishioners, in which the Pope said he had never denied anyone communion, kind of trying to obfuscate what the Pope said as very strong words about abortion. Then I saw in other media outlets, places where people picked up what the Pope said about abortion, but miss the Pope's point, which that pastors need to really work with and stand with people who, as he says, are temporarily outside of the church's communion because of their position on abortion, but really to invite them back and to call them to conversion. So it was interesting because the Pope was both very clear about the church's moral teaching and also very clear about the obligation of pastors to continue to evangelize people, to continue to invite them back into the communion of the church. And in one way or another, both of those things, I think, got lost depending on where you look.
No, I agree. And you were, again, I thought your organization, correct me if I'm wrong on this, you were the first ones to report on this story. Am I correct?
No, we weren't. We didn't have somebody on the papal plane. So the news outlets that had somebody on the plane reported it before us. But what we tried to do was just to take as much of the Pope's comments as we could and synthesize them and then put them in the context of what the church says in general, what the U.S. bishops are up to right now, in order to help people better understand kind of what the Pope was trying to get at.
So just for clarity then, the church's position on whether or not a politician who supports abortion should receive communion. Address that, again, what the Holy Father said. Some people are saying, oh, the headlines were that the Pope, you know, what he said was a challenge to U.S. bishops who want to deny communion to politicians like Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi. I didn't hear that, but maybe we could just bring some clarity to this because this is an issue that comes up over and over again.
I didn't hear that either. What the church says in its canon law is that Catholics who, this is a quote here, obstinately persevere in manifest grave sin are not to be admitted to Holy Communion. And what that means is that a person who's living a life in a public way that is, in a situation of sin and contrary to the teachings of the church should not be admitted to the Eucharist. That bit about obstinacy means that a person has been warned by their pastor or their bishop to change their ways and has chosen not to. And, you know, since 2004, the church has given guidance. Cardinal Ratzinger famously gave guidance in 2004, and at other times after that, the church has given guidance to say that a Catholic politician who consistently advocates for legal protection for abortion or federal funding for abortion or permissive abortion laws could be in that category of obstinately persevering in manifest grave sin right. If his bishop or his pastor warns him to change his ways and he doesn't. And in that case, such a person should not be admitted to Holy Communion. Well, and, the Pope kind of got at that. Yesterday, he talked about the fact that a person in that situation is, he talked about being temporarily outside of the communion of the church and that communion is for the community and an expression of the community of the church, which is true. And so that was, I think, kind of lost. Now, the Pope also said, you know, that has to be something that a pastor discusses or a bishop discusses with the Catholic. And that's where a lot of people said, oh, no, the Pope is saying, you know, that the USCCB can't do this, which is true, that the USCCB can't, or that the U.S. bishop shouldn't do this, which was really not, I think, what the Pope was driving at all.
I thought he was very pastoral in his remarks. Just final thoughts here. I only have a couple minutes left. The Pope was also asked about so-called same-sex marriage. What did he say about that?
Well, you know, he said that the church, that he upholds the traditional teaching of the church, the teaching which is rooted not only in revelation but in natural law, that marriage is a lifelong partnership of a man and a woman, and in the Christian context, it's a sacrament. The church can't change that. He did say, you know, that there are situations where civil law might recognize, for example, he gave the example of two widows who live together in order to be able to receive sort of hospital services or social services for each other.
Right.
But he wanted to distinguish that very, very clearly between that and a romantic partnership or a sexual partnership. That's not kind of what the Pope was sort of talking about there.
And final thought here, just on the media coverage too, CNN, New York Times, AP, they spun the story a little bit differently than you reported on it. How do you read that? Why?
Well, I think there are a couple things. First of all, I think it's important to understand the church on her own term. And, the church is a society, and to understand it, I think one has to be a member of that society, to live in that society. And so when you try to report on the church from the outside, it can be easy to hear sound bites and, I think, not understand the whole context in which they come from or not understand the theological tradition from which they reference. So we try to report on the church objectively and tell the truth, but we try to use our experience and our as practicing Catholics, people who live the life of faith, and our formation in theology and canon law and philosophy, in order to sort of understand what it is that the church is saying when she uses specific language that I think is often misunderstood or misrepresented, because things are sort of looked at too often through just a political, secular lens instead of the church's own lenses.
That's well said. J.D., thank you. Good job again on your reporting. I'm grateful for what you're doing. Grateful to have you. Get everybody plugged in. Go check out The Pillar, all right? Do a quick search, The Pillar, or just go to the website directly, pillarcatholic.com, pillarcatholic.com. You can also follow J.D. Flynn there on Twitter, at J.D. Flynn. All right, stay with me. When we come back, it seems that addictions are on the rise. That's not news, is it? We'll take a look at why, though. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
At that time in my life, happiness for me basically meant feeling good, having, you know, women constantly and drugs, the high of those experiences. So I thought that I was happy. But obviously, you know, you come down after those experiences, so I tried not to be sober too much. And it just led to several years of being almost perpetually high. One night, when I was going on 21 years old, I really did not want to live anymore. And I was contemplating taking my own life. I was in my parents' house. I panicked. In the silence of that room that night, with no music, no noise, no party, nothing going on, and I went out into the hallway and picked up a book on the bookshelf. The book that they had was about Marian apparitions. I had no idea what that was. I started to read that book, and it talked about a beautiful woman named Mary, who was the mother of Jesus, and that she was beautiful. And she was so beautiful that she would make little children cry and fall on their knees because of her femininity and her loveliness. That fascinated me. And so I think God used the beauty of the Virgin Mary to get me. And it was a brilliant method because it worked.
That was the just part of what is an incredible story, the story of Father Donald Calloway. If you have a child right now who is battling drugs, maybe it's a brother, maybe it's a sister, maybe it's somebody that you love that's in your family, your prayers work. I know his mother probably shed a lot of tears over her son. You know, she prayed hard for him. He grew up in lots of different places. His stepfather was based in the military, and you know, they continued to move his family, California, Japan. They were all over the place. Young Don Calloway did drugs, had sex, smoked pot, you know, he drank. He said he did this all by the age of 11. That's what he told me. He stayed at my home about a month ago. Now, back in March, he was over. He was here March 19th. We celebrated the Great Feast of St. Joseph. And I like hanging out with him because he likes music. He likes good food. He likes, I mean, we just have a good time. You just kind of connect. And there's a good vibe with him, right? And I remember his story. I'm like, my gosh, drugs and smoking and drinking and all that stuff by age 11? Are you kidding me? And it escalated to the point, it got out of control. When his father moved him to Japan, he ended up running drugs for like the Japanese mafia. And you talk about somebody who was lost, somebody who saw the inside of a jail, right? He said, you know, he was on a military base there and he fled, right? He committed felonies. He stole massive amounts of money, cars, mopeds. He did everything, right? Here's this wild child. You think your kid is bad? Running errands for the Japanese mafia? Today, he is a Catholic priest. Today, he is a Catholic priest spreading devotion to the Mother of God. Now, he did that beautiful book on consecration to St. Joseph. I love this guy. I think I know he's the real deal. I mean, I really do. And you know what he is? More than anything else, he's a symbol of hope to anyone who has drug addiction in their family. Anybody who's got a wayward, wild child. You look at St. Monica and the conversion of Augustine, your child can be the next Augustine. They could be the next Calloway. God's mercy, his grace, your prayers have a way of piercing the heart and bringing the soul back to him. That's what God wants. That's what he wants. And, you know, one day I'll share that story. It's such a great story of Calloway. A lot going on in the culture, though, and I do want to address this issue. This is National Recovery Month. That's what I was told. The amount of bad news that's impacting our country right now, and there's a lot, from COVID to the economy to you name it, it's having a negative effect on a lot of people. And those negative effects have been seen in the rise of addiction throughout the country, right? The CDC, they found that about 81,000 people, get a load of this number, okay? 81,000 people. Think of a football stadium plus, right? Most football stadiums are, what, 50,000, 70,000? 81,000 people overdosed on opioids. They OD'd on opioids as of May 2020. A huge spike just from the previous year. That's just the latest statistic we have from the CDC. They also reported that 13% of Americans either started or they increased their use of an addictive substance last year to help them cope with stress and the stress of the pandemic. And we've seen this, right? People started drinking and working from home, having a cocktail a little bit earlier. Happy hours happen a little bit earlier. It's really easy to form bad habits. You know, good habits are virtues. Bad habits are vice. And a lot of people found themselves saying, whoa, man, I'm drinking a little too much, or whoa, I'm smoking a little too much pot, or whoa. I mean, you can see how this happens. One clinical psychologist told the American Psychological Association that she has seen a spike in substance abuse that includes an increase both in the quantity and the frequency of drug use during the pandemic. And I'm always tired of talking about this stat. I mean, teens, right? Your teens. Teens in the U.S. are turning to drugs at twice the rate they used to. They're twice as likely to use them right now as teens in Britain. Of course, with marijuana now being legalized in a lot of states, it doesn't help. I mean, it's very abundant and very available. But according to drug abuse statistics, right, you can go to this website, drugabusestatistics.org, 53 million people in the United States of America, 53 million who are 12 and over have used illegal drugs or misused prescription drugs just within the last year. Not in their lifetime. Just in the last year, 53 million. So those who have actual addictions, the number is about half that. It's down about 21 million, and it doesn't include those who are addicted. There's a whole other conversation here I won't get into, but you know what another addiction is out there? It's not opioids. It's not alcohol. It's pornography. That's a whole, that's a pandemic, pornography. And psychologists are saying pornography is just as bad as heroin. I mean, you know how addictive it is. You know how hard it is to break that cycle. You know what it does to the brain, what it does to the relationship. You know how destructive it can be. People don't see it in the same category. I'm joined right now by Peter Klaponis, Dr. Peter Klaponis. He's a licensed clinical therapist and assistant director of comprehensive counseling services in West Conshohocken, Pennsylvania. He's been with us in the past, a good friend of Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons as well. And you can find him at that website we often talk about, maritalhealing.com. Good to have you back with me, Doctor. Good afternoon.
Good. It's good to be here with you again.
So, these numbers, and part of me doesn't even like talking about this stuff. It's so depressing, to be honest with you. I think people know this, but when I see this data, I do think it's important for us to put it into perspective so people know they're not alone, that there is help. Why do people, let's talk about the psychology behind this first, why do they turn to substances in order to find relief from psychological stress that they're undergoing?
Well, because they're looking for a quick release to their pain. They're looking for a quick fix. And oftentimes these substances, whether it be drugs or alcohol or pornography, make the pain go away in a very short period of time. Unfortunately, the effects are temporary and the effects are often disastrous, but they still keep going back to it over and over again to kill the pain.
Yeah. One therapist has said that addicts, they're not blind because they do see the consequences. I have a family member who has battled drugs, and, I just don't get it. I mean, to me, my mindset, my worldview, it's totally different than this particular individual's, right? But this one therapist is like, they're not blind. They know there's consequences. I've always taught my children when they were growing up, too, look, your actions have consequences. You make good decisions, then you're going to see the good results. You make bad decisions, there are consequences. You're going to see some negative results, And that's something that's kind of the way I've always looked at life. I understand consequences. But people who do drugs, I'm thinking, don't you understand what's going to happen if you drive or if you do this, what's going to do to your job or your marriage? Explain this a little, if you could. I mean, what they're doing, even though they know it, what drives that? I mean, how do you interrupt this vicious cycle? How do you make them aware of the consequences of these bad decisions?
Well, this is where, reality and therapy come into play, helping them to understand how they're hurting their loved ones with it. Sometimes this requires a type of an intervention. Oftentimes it may require an ultimatum, but it's usually someone, a loved one, is there to help them to understand that what they're doing is detrimental and it is affecting many people's lives with this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, a lot of addictions bring people to financial ruin as well as ruining their relationships. What is it? They often say, you need to hit rock bottom before you can get better. And I often say with some of these addictions, the heroin in particular, you're going to either end up in the grave or in prison. I mean, that's the byproduct of this. But what's it take, and why? I mean, I guess bottom is different for a lot of people, isn't it? I mean, why does it often have to be rock bottom, and how often do you have to hit that before you finally realize that, you know, I can't live like this anymore?
Well, you know, I always say that change occurs when the pain of not changing is greater than the pain of change. You know, and you have to get to that point. You know, people talk about they get to the point where they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You have to get to that point. For some people, that's rock bottom. For some people, it isn't rock bottom. But it's at that point where you realize that where you're going is causing more pain than the change of, you know, getting into recovery.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Peter Komponos. Let me do this, too. I'm going to open the phones. If you want to get in, I only have them for a few moments this afternoon. I'll give you an opportunity to talk to him. Maybe you're going through a tough time right now with a loved one. Maybe it's you. Maybe you're struggling right now, and you can't get out of the cycle that you're in. The number to join the conversation to get some insight is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, Dr. Maggie and I were talking before the broadcast. She had shared with me that there was an interesting study once done on mice. The one cage of mice, they were given poor cage conditions, and they were given water that was, you know, normal, and also water that was tainted with a drug. And the mice would ultimately overdose on the water to escape the conditions. The other cage was nice, and the mice were given normal water and drug water. Those mice chose the normal water. Did I get that right, Maggie? Which one chose the drugs?
When they were in the poor conditions,
they chose the mice.
They chose the tainted water.
Right, okay.
And when the mice were given better living conditions, they didn't choose the drug.
So are you familiar with that study at all, Doctor? And what is it? Is it about the conditions of life that drive us to this type of behavior?
It is about the conditions of life. You know, what are we dealing with life? You know, do we have good, healthy relationships? Do we feel good about ourselves? You know, do we have healthy self-esteem? You know, are we doing well in our careers, in our school, in our family, in our relationships? All of these things play roles in whether or not a person will choose to self-medicate.
Yeah. It's a shame. You feel powerless, really, for this. And you know, I don't want to diminish addiction at all, but I also think, you know, there's of course a chemical reliance, there's a psychological, you know, problem with this. I mean, there's sometimes even physical addiction. It goes, what about the spiritual? Because I also think, I mean, when you see someone who battles addiction, you see the destruction it wreaks in homes and families and marriages and the lives in general. To me, it almost seems demonic in some respects. Is there a spiritual component to addiction as well?
Oh, I believe there's a spiritual battle going on here with addiction. You know, Satan wants to tear apart families. He wants to tear apart marriages, and one of the ways he can do that is through addiction. Because addiction brings chaos into families. It brings chaos into marital relationships. You know, things get so out of control because of the substance or the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So there definitely is a spiritual battle here. And you look at any type of good, solid recovery program, it's going to have a strong spiritual component to it. You know, turning to God, turning to your higher power, turning to God as you understand Him. Because we know that without God, we can't do any of this.
You're right. Amen to that. John in La Crosse, Wisconsin, thanks for your patience. You're on with Dr. Komponos.
Hey, Doc, I just got a question. I was listening to you guys, and you said that, you know, people are always looking for a quick fix, and something just kind of hits me in my face all the time is that in society, even in the medical field to the illegal drugs, everybody wants that quick fix. And, you know, parents are quick to put their kids on some form of antidepressant or Adderall for ADHD or something along those lines. I'm just wondering if it's just because of the norm of society self-prescribing, self-medication, realistically thinking of this stuff. And then as kids get so used to being on something that when they proved it's not enough, or if it's not working, then they choose to go to something else. Is that really realistically what I would call a pandemic? Is everyone just, you know, and I hate to say it, I'm only 37 years old, but I was a young boy at once and was probably really wild on my parents. And my parents never thought once that I was doing anything different. But I feel like nowadays where faith is falling out of society and God, let alone, let's just say that parents tend to be on the lazier side and don't want to deal with problems. and hit them head on because they're scared to make that tough decision. Is that a component of all this stuff in society?
I think it does play a role. I think it does play a role. You know, parents, they're too quick to try and look for, well, either they'll try to dismiss whatever is going on in their kids' lives, saying this is a phase, we'll get through it, and not really address any deep problems. Or, like you said, they'll be quick to want them to take a pill.
Yeah.
Really what we need is good, strong family life.
Right. That's so true. Doctor, I have to hold it right here for a second. Stay with me. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll pick it up and we'll talk more. If you want to get in, as I said, just a few moments more with Dr. Peter Kalponis. We're talking about the rise of addiction in the U.S. The pandemic has really exacerbated that problem. You may be dealing with it personally. You may have a loved one that is grappling with it. We're tapping into his expertise, and I'll let you join the conversation. Pull up a chair. I'll be back right after this.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. Hey, we're going to pray in about 10 minutes. And let's pray for addiction. It affects every family. No one's immune. I know if it's not your immediate family, it's probably your extended family or somebody you know or love. And there's freedom from it. I want you to know there is healing. I mean, addiction doesn't have the last word. God has the last word when it comes to this. And there are some great resources out there for help. Before I jump back in the phones, and I do want to grab a few of your calls very quickly here, I was talking with Dr. Kalponis during the break. And if you want to check him out, by the way, his website's drpeterkalponis.com.
No. Just peterkalponis.com.
All right, you dropped the doctor. Good for you. All right, so Peter Kalponis, K-L-E-P-O-N-I-S, a humble man. I like that.
Yeah.
No MD at the end of it. You can check it out. And you and I were talking about loneliness, and I, during the pandemic with all this separation, even though we have, you know, digital technology and people were more connected than ever, it seems that loneliness is on the rise, and that loneliness, there's a connection to the rise in addictive behavior. Do you see that connection, and what role is loneliness, or, you know, as a result of the pandemic, or just in general, playing in addiction today?
Loneliness and isolation are playing a huge role. You know, now we're finally kind of coming out of this pandemic, but for a year we were all stuck at home. We were working from home, kids were going to school from home, doing everything virtually. We were sitting in our little rooms isolated, and this created a lot of loneliness and boredom, and this can lead to a lot of addictive behaviors, wanting to escape from that. And this is why I believe we see the spike in all kinds of addictive behaviors over the past year.
Right. Oh, no doubt about that. I mean, the data clearly reveals that. We only have a few minutes, so let's grab a quick call or two here. Let me go to Joanne, listening in Pennsylvania. Joanne, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Drew. Hi. I've talked to you before about this. I'm a little bit better right now. I have lost my son. He was 25. And we lost him October 17th, 2017.
Yeah, heroin overdose,
prayed for
right?
Him.
He died from a heroin overdose?
It was a heroin spike with fentanyl. Mm. And so I consider it a poisoning. But anyway, I wanted to tell you that what you're saying is what I've learned. I was already in love with Jesus, but this really put it to the test. Mm-hmm. And I do trust Jesus now. My verse is wonderful, but so that I don't get on all the other things, mm-hmm. My question is Vivitrol. After we tried it a couple months, I found out, because Tommy said, and the doctor said it might not work, and I wasn't sure why, but they said that they have a situation where with dual diagnosed co-occurring problems with mental health, bipolar 2 he was diagnosed with, and he was just starting to go to the psychiatrist, mm-hmm. You know, 2 or 3 weeks before he passed away,
mm-hmm.
And he was on some medicine for that. And he did say that he was feeling better with that. But
yep.
I found out that it does any type of the Vivitrol does not work when you have the mental illness along with it.
All right.
So that's what my question really is.
I'll let Dr. Kloponos respond. Go ahead, Doc.
Okay. Unfortunately, I really can't speak on that because I'm not a psychiatrist. All right. Those would be a question for a medical doctor when you're talking about different medications.
Okay. All right. Well, Joanne, thank you. We'll try to track that down for you and get you connected to somebody who can. We'll go to John in Chicago next. John, you're on the air with Dr. Kloponos. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I've been in recovery for decades, and I help many people. And in my experience, addiction is always a spiritual sickness. If it weren't, then the ways of the world would make us feel better, and we wouldn't see celebrities who ostensibly have everything material killing themselves. We have this emptiness in us, and we seek relief, and we don't even know we're addicted until we've sought it in such a way that our lives are distorted. But many people turn to many things, whether it be pornography or drugs or alcohol or relationships or gambling. And these are all symptoms of the same spiritual problem.
All right, Doctor, your thoughts?
I agree. I agree that this is a deep spiritual problem, you know, and what we need, you know, is, you know, not just, you know, in our good recovery programs, but in our lives, we need to have that deep relationship with Jesus. And without that, you're not going to survive. You're not going to get through this.
Yeah, no doubt.
So congratulations to you for being in recovery for so many years. That's great.
Hey, John, thank you for your call. And Doctor, I've got to hold it right there. I want to thank you for being here with us. So PeterKloponos.com, best way to connect to you. And we'll continue to not only follow these numbers, but certainly pray about them. We're going to pray the chaplet just coming up in a minute or two here. So keep up your good work, okay? And if you see Dr. Fitzgibbons, tell him we said hello, would you?
Thank you. I will.
You got it. That's Dr. Peter Kloponos. Now, about 5 minutes before the top of the hour, we will pray the chaplet coming up. Let me take a quick telephone call here from Mark. He's listening to us, I think, in Florida. Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, Mark. Mark is a guy who I know the voice. Just I met him in chapel today. I was praying this afternoon after Mass. And I was doing some adoration, and a man comes by and he taps me on the shoulder. Are you Drew? And I said, well, yeah. He said, I used to listen to you in Wisconsin, and I've moved to Florida. Mark, it's good to have you here. I think it was Providence, our paths crossed. You are involved in a campaign, and why don't we tell everybody about that very quickly? I only have a moment or two for you, but you're marshaling prayer, right, for the country? Tell me a little bit about what you're doing.
Okay, and earlier this year, when our country obviously took a deep dive down, and many Americans are seriously offended, losing sleep and everything else, I decided I have to do everything I can think of to help alleviate this terrible problem in our nation. And, of course, we all revert to prayer. I was aware of that one, and donations at the right causes. I was aware of that one. But I knew I had to come up with something more creative. So after much prayer, I decided what I'm going to try to do is join the effort to create a holy revival. It's kind of similar to the one that I had back in the 1900s, or 19th century, I should say. But I created an intercessory prayer website for our nation in order to bring us back to one nation under God, and also to stop abortions. And you want the address for that, Drew?
No, sure, why not? Yeah.
Okay, it's www.pray, and then the number 4, right. USA.net. And, you know, I often thought to myself that God gave us the blueprint on how to solve serious problems like this, especially when we're overwhelmed in 2 Chronicles 7:14. And most people are aware of that one, but I elaborate on that on my website. Do you have one more minute?
I have less than a minute, but one of the things you do is pray the rosary, right? Is that part of the campaign?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in 1571, there's a similar problem. Secularism taking over the Christianity, and Saint Pope Pius V is the one that suggested the rosary. And back then, we were victorious in that cause, and we're going to be victorious again. As a matter of fact, he's the one that created October 7th, Our Lady of the Rosary, Holy Day.
So yeah, that's a very famous Battle of Lepanto that brought that about. And he had a rosary crusade underway. And when the Turks came and met the Christian forces were brutally outnumbered, and only by the grace of God did they win that battle. They said wind blew up and Turkish forces collided with one another. They ended up winning. Christianity saved the spread of Islam, and Christianity ultimately prevailed, and of course he declared October 7th, the day of the victory, is the feast of Our Lady of the Holy Rosary, and we celebrate that to this day. In fact, if you want to pray the rosary, Father Rocky prays it every evening at 7 p.m. Central, and I would invite you to join him for the Rosary Across America. I love this prayer. It's a prayer I pray every day. I pray the rosary, and I pray the chaplet every day. Mark, thank you for what you're doing. We need more citizens like you promoting prayer, and I'm really grateful for that. So, in fact, stay with me because we're going to pray right now the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And then right after that, I'm going to talk about something else that is underway. An exorcist will be joining me. We're going to talk about the spiritual forces that are unfolding around us right now and what we can do to mitigate those, change not only your life and your family, but perhaps the nation and the world. All that and more coming up straight ahead. Stay with me.